He's right, it is time. Okay, I didn't plan on talking about this morning, but I was looking at this information from a textbook, and I just find it so compelling and so interesting. I want to ask you a question. There is a unique autoimmune disease called multiple sclerosis. There's been some characters that I've read about over history that have had it, and so it's always made me kind of curious. What would cause the immune system to start radically attacking the nervous system, and then a person just can't function at a high level? Well, you do not want your immune system spending its energy attacking you, but I've kind of asked myself the question. I have seen quite a few people that have actually had the diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, and I kind of asked the question, well, how did they get here? And what would be some of the factors that might contribute to the development? Or, there's another way of saying this, why don't they get well? How come the body can't get back into balance and restore itself? Anyway, I came across this article. It came from the journal, the medical journal Neurology. I'm guessing if you're a neurologist or neurosurgeon, you probably subscribe to that. I'm guessing it cost $13 million a year to subscribe. No, I'm only joking about that. If you haven't looked at the price of some of these medical journals to pay for them for a subscription, and they just may produce four, you know, journals, four independent volumes a year, I mean, sometimes it's high. I've seen them easily go for $1,200 a year for a subscription. Well, to me, that's a lot of money, so yeah, it might be a little bit of a hassle, but if I can find out that an expensive journal has an article and I can look at it online, I think I'm going to do that if I can do it for free. Anyway, there was a study published in the journal Neurology in the year 2007, not quite 20 years ago. And what it shows is that sun avoidance, we're talking about avoiding being in the sunlight. You don't have to be a genius to figure this out. You kind of know who goes outdoors and also who stays indoors all day long. And actually, there's some people, they make it their business not to expose their skin to light. I'm telling you, it's almost like they have a phobia of sunlight. Anyway, enough of that. So what they're looking at is they're looking at sun avoidance in childhood and if there's an increase in the risk of multiple sclerosis later in life. So that's it. Did you play outside all day long as a child, or did you stay indoors all day long? Well, if you were raised in the early 1960s, you probably spent your days outside. If not, if you're raised in modern times, you might just be indoors on your cell phone or on the computer or playing video games. Okay, researchers at the University of Southern California, they assessed sun exposure of 79 pairs of identical twins in the U.S. and Canada. What they found was twins who developed the disease, meaning the autoimmune disease multiple sclerosis, where the immune system starts attacking the nerves of the body. Significantly, twins who had spent more of their childhood tanning in the sun than their sibling, okay, you got one twin, these are identical twins, I kind of like these studies. So if you went out in the sun to play, as opposed to your twin that did not go outside to play, my mother was a twin, by the way, you reduced your risk of developing MS by 50%. Previous research from Tasmania, published in the British Medical Journal in 2003, they found that 2 to 3 hours of sun exposure every week between the ages of 6 and 15 years old cut the risk of MS development by almost 60%. Randy has it, keeps a calculator here. Randy, is it okay if I borrow your calculator? Thank you, Randy. Okay, so if I type in, what does 2 to 3 hours of sun exposure look like a week? And granted, that reduces your risk of developing an autoimmune disease called MS, multiple sclerosis, by almost 60%. I think it's like 58.7. Anyway, let's just say we can round it up to 60%. That's a big number. So if that's 17 to 25 minutes a day outdoors, is that something that's just too difficult and too hard? No. If anything, when I read stuff like that, I think, I think, oh boy, this is like easy to do. And it's free. It doesn't cost anything. Here's another one that I came across. Okay, this is a different topic, but from the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, 2005, it shows that people who are in the early stages of the disease are less likely to die of it if in the past they spent a lot of time in the sunshine. Okay, that's pretty simple. Here's one right here. Now, this one is going to kind of hit close to home. It may be that you have a dear aunt, a relative, who's recently been placed in a nursing home facility because of a fractured leg, or let's just say they had a broken hip. Well, you're thinking, oh my goodness, I hope she recovers. I want what's best for her. Well, listen to this right here. A study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in the year 2006 showed that the chances of someone being admitted to the nursing home was directly related to their vitamin D levels. Okay? Elderly people who are deficient are more than 3 times more likely to be admitted at some point than those who have higher levels of vitamin D. And of course, I want to rephrase that. When they say high levels of vitamin D, I'm going to say closer to optimal, meaning they have enough to help their bodies build strong bones. Does that make sense? Okay, here's another one right here. This one I also find interesting because, you know, it doesn't take a genius to observe people and find out there's a lot of people in this world that suffer horribly from anxiety and panic attacks and depression. Well, listen to this right here. You know what I mean. Somebody that just does not feel emotionally well. They're just constantly struggling. Well, just ask yourself the question, what am I doing? Here it is right here. In the year 2002, scientists showed conclusively that there is a link between sunlight and serotonin. Okay, do you know what serotonin is? Serotonin is a unique neurotransmitter. It's produced within your body. But like anything else, there's a Goldilocks just right amount of it. Or maybe I should say it better, that there's an optimal amount that your body needs to get the job done, to keep you in great working order. Maybe if I used water as my analogy, you tell me, does your body function much better on 2 ounces of water a day or on 80 ounces of water a day? Well, I think we know the answer to that. And I don't really know what your weight is or your fluid consumption, but folks, your body cannot work right unless you have enough water. Does that make sense? Okay, so in 2002, they showed there was a link between sunlight exposure and a person's serotonin levels. And so by implication, folks, we're talking about who's going to be at risk for having what's called depression. Okay. They found that the levels of this neurotransmitter, serotonin, in the brain were the absolute lowest during the autumn and the winter times of the year. And serotonin was naturally the highest during the spring and the summer. Well, I wonder why. Well, you tell me, when is sunlight most plentiful? Would that be during December and January, or is that during June, July, and August? Okay, well, you know that. They also found that the rate of production of serotonin by the brain directly relates to the duration of sunlight and rises rapidly as the sun grows brighter. I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, okay, so you're saying, Dr. Morgan, that if my body just naturally makes more serotonin, then I'm better off as far as my mood and how I feel and how I function. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like anything else. You want to be at your very best, not your very worst. Well, listen to this right here. Kind of the same topic. I can tell you right now, there's going to be some people that say, this is amazing. You know, how a person interprets something has always fascinated me. But you tell me how you interpret this right here. In the year 2005, the month of April, there was a study published in the American Journal of Psychiatry, okay? And they concluded that light therapy is just as effective as medication in the treatment of major depressive illnesses. And it has fewer side effects. Yeah, now I know what you're thinking. I don't want you to go to Galveston today and lay on the beach for 14 hours on one side so you can destroy your skin. Yes, the studies show that when you have horrific sunburns, you're putting yourself at risk for developing skin cancer. Now, what if you just use the sense that God gave you? You know, you got this God-given intelligence. You got your wits about you. You want to use wisdom and knowledge and understanding. And so you've heard that laying in the sun for 14 hours straight may not be a good idea. Well, I think you need to follow up on that. But what if you were outside? It may be a better time of the day when the rays of the sun may not be so extremely, you know, severely potent. I mean, they're just going to be strong this time of year. But what if you went out at 5:30? Chances of you getting burned if you spend 25 minutes outside is like non-existent. And, of course, the more of your skin that you expose to the sunlight, the better. Okay? All right. Now, this one's a little bit different. The current estimates are there are 2 billion people on planet Earth right now. And so out of 8 billion, that's like, what, a quarter? So 25% of all the people on the planet, they currently test positive for having tuberculosis. You don't really have to know a lot about tuberculosis. If you don't know what that looks like, I recommend you watch the Western called Tombstone. You'll see Val Kilmer or Doc Holloway. He has tuberculosis. I tell you, they did a good job of depicting him having tuberculosis. I mean, he had coughing and sick spells where blood would come up and sputum that was discolored. Anyway, kind of gross. Well, tuberculosis is not the type of bacteria that you want living inside of your body. When you have a chronic infection in your body, what does the infection do? It just basically goes through all your resources. So if you're eating a delicious meal, well, the infection is going to be stealing some of those nutrients that you really need for your own self. You're not there, so parasites can steal all your delicious nutrients and use them for themselves to grow the infection. Of course not. Well, listen to this right here. Research shows that vitamin D is going to boost the anti-tuberculosis immunity significantly. And I realize some of these studies are like almost 20 years old, but that doesn't mean they're not true. Sometimes I spend my days, when I have a free moment, going back and trying to figure things out, like, what does that mean right there? Or what does that drug do? Or how does this work? I think it's good to be curious, don't you? We want to like study things. We want to be like the Bereans in Acts chapter 17. And so here we go. In 2006, there was an article published in Science magazine, which I think is a pretty big-time journal. They demonstrated that vitamin D is central to the biological process of the body and how it uses that to fight tuberculosis. Okay? Folks, people are dying in the millions, probably the hundreds of millions, every single year because their body just succumbs to the chronic effects of tuberculosis. They're like Doc Holliday. They get worn down. Okay. I said Doc Holloway earlier. That wasn't right. Doc Holliday. Anyway, in the year 2006, scientists in Indonesia, where there might be a lot of TB currently. Okay, just listen to this right here. Just let it roll around in your head. Think about it. Okay, in 2006, scientists in Indonesia reported that when they gave people with TB, you know, people that were in quarantine to tuberculosis sanitariums probably, because you got to get them out of society. That would be like if AIDS was running rampant here in America, we would need to quarantine. Never mind. Anyway, so what they did was in 2006 in Indonesia, they just gave a daily dose of 10,000 IUs. If you want to say 10,000 international units, I don't have my computer in front of me to convert that to micrograms. So that may be like old school, but you're with me on that, right? What's the dose again? What did they give people that had tuberculosis? They gave them 10,000 IUs. They gave it to him every day. That means there's a pattern here of being consistent. They did not give them 10,000 units of vitamin D for one day or one day a week or one day a month. No, it was daily. And they gave it to him for 9 months. I did not read in the study that anybody said, oh no, I have a horrible side effect. Anyway, so they gave it to him every day for 9 months, and guess what happened? All of a sudden, they could no longer find tuberculosis in these patients by checking their sputum, okay? By the way, TB is making a comeback. I vote that we do things to keep your body in great working order so you don't get it and I don't get it. Okay, none of that is anything that I planned on talking about this morning. So if I got sidetracked, I hope I gave you something you can use. So here's what I want you to consider. Do you get sunlight on your skin? Okay, that's all I'm suggesting. If you want to join me on the radio, if you have a question, that's really what I'm here for. If you have a question, if you're going to call me on the phone and tell me how great, synthetic drugs are to restore your health, I'll say, okay, I'll listen to you. But we're going to have to prove it. I'm going to have to look it up and find out if what you're saying is true. But if you want my biased opinion, which is what can we do to feed and nourish the body? What has God created for us in nature that can actually help us get stronger and better and help us have a better life? Well, that's what I want to focus on. The phone number is 903-589-8508. That's 903-589-8507. Okay, I found this article by accident last night. Accident. I wasn't looking for it. But I started looking at it. I said, man, that looks interesting right there. I want to study this. Okay, the title of it was basically, just loosely, one capsule of fish oil daily lowers cortisol levels. And I thought, no way. Who would have thought of that? Okay. As a general rule, I mean, I know you know that we've got to have a little bit of cortisol. Without cortisol, you can't wake up in the morning. You can't get your brain in gear. Okay, you can't accomplish, great things. I think someone's trying to call. So let's go ahead and take this phone call. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for your call.
Sure. Thank you for taking my call.
You betcha.
All right. I was calling to ask. I have an issue with, I've been practicing doing my deep squats.
You do what during the deep squats? What's the issue?
Joe, I've been doing deep squats and seems like when I stay down, like right at 5 minutes, when I come up, I'm really lightheaded that quick. I mean, I try to come up slow, but, it's when you need to get up, you need to get up. So,
well, that's telling me something about your blood flow right there.
Okay.
So let me give you two or three ideas. If you were to stand up right now and just practice doing deep squats, how many do you think you could do if you just did one repetition after the other? I don't mean holding it for 5 minutes, but just going up and down at a normal pace. How many could you do?
I could probably get 12.
Okay. Well, I'm going to suggest to you the number that I'm thinking of, I think it's going to be around 20. If you can build up to where you can do 20 without getting lightheaded, then that's going to represent that you've actually improved the blood flow to all the muscles and thus blood flow to the brain too. But I like what you're telling me, though. You're doing a deep squat for about 5 minutes because you want to keep your feet and your ankles and your knees and your hips and your back in great working order so you can last a long time, right?
Exactly.
Okay, good.
Exactly right.
So I'm going to take you like in a little bit different direction here, but it's really all the same thing. If you were to look at the bare skin around your ankle, is there any chance that you have some very small, superficial, broken veins that look kind of purplish?
No.
What'd you say?
No, not at all.
So there's no broken veins anywhere?
No, sir.
Do you have any toenails that are either yellow or thickened?
The pinky toe.
The pinky toes? Feet. So that would be one clue that you're probably not getting enough oxygen to your feet or your legs.
Okay. Okay.
There was a study years ago where they looked at people that walked barefoot. I know this doesn't sound like anything Americans want to do, but just think of it this way. When you're home and you're under your own circumstances, you could take your shoes and your socks off, and you could walk around the yard, and you could pull weeds in the garden, and you could do this and that in the house without any shoes on. Is that right?
Correct.
So when you put your bare foot on the ground, that places the feet in a position where it has to grow some new nerves, arteries, and blood vessels just to adapt and develop to the stress you're placing on them. So as a general rule, people that walk barefooted for about 6 months, as much as they can, they have twice as many arteries and twice as many veins and twice as many nerves compared to people that only walk with shoes on.
I see.
And what happens is that's just enough stress to cause your body to adapt and grow new tissue. But I like what you're doing, though, because when you hold a squat for 5 minutes, you're telling your body, I demand that you adapt and become stronger.
I demand.
Well, you got to. So a lady asked me yesterday, she said, how do you grow muscle? I said, well, you got to put stress on the body and you got to eat protein. So even if you were working out and you said, I am refusing to eat protein, I think that I'm going to live the rest of my life just on celery and cucumbers. Well, your life may not be quite as long as a person that gets plenty of protein. And as a person ages, it really does become increasingly difficult to get enough protein. Usually what I observe is, if I go to the grocery store and I watch people, what they put in their shopping carts, as they get older, it's fewer chickens and less salmon and less beef and eggs. It's going to be more processed food like Chips Ahoy cookies and ramen noodles and Coke, which has no value whatsoever. So if you'll start walking, if you'll try to build your strength just enough to see if you can stimulate. See, I want you to go push just enough to where you become tired, but I don't want you to push so hard that you risk injuring a joint or, you know, tearing something like a tendon or a ligament.
Okay.
Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I am 53.
Okay. If I told you what I would do if it were me, would you listen to that?
Most definitely.
Okay. So do you know what cod liver oil is?
Yes.
I'm going to repeat what the woman told me this week. She came and she said, you're not going to believe what's happened to my blood pressure. I said, what's happened? She said, I started taking cod liver oil. I think I talked about that on the radio. Maybe that's what her reference points was. But in the study, they showed that people could grow new muscle and become physically stronger when they took 7 gel caps a day of cod liver oil. Now, I realize that's a lot, but that's the number they chose in the that was what they did. They either they didn't take cod liver oil or they took fish oil at 7 gel caps a day. And all of a sudden, everything began to change in the body, which kind of leads us to a principle. There's always the Goldilocks just right, or there's always the optimal just right dose. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
So if you were going to sit down and eat a fish fillet, if it was like a fillet of fish sandwich full of chemicals and who knows where the fish comes from, that's probably not going to be the same fish as if you had wild-caught salmon in front of you. One's probably going to be higher quality and a greater nutritional density. I know that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
But she was telling me all of a sudden her blood pressure is no longer high. And I thought, well, wait, that was easy. So when you want to grow new brain cells and you want to grow new muscles in the body, fish oil is definitely one of those things that you can take a look at. And plus, they have a simple test where you could just take a drop of the blood. You know, you take a little bitty auto lancet and you prick your finger and you put a drop of blood on this card, let it air dry. You just pop it in the middle of the laboratory and they will tell you exactly what are the concentrations of omega-3 fatty acids in your bloodstream, which I think is kind of cool. I think the lab charges like $79 for it. I know that's expensive, but my point that I'm getting to is the average American is going to be right at 4% omega-3 fatty acids in their red blood cell membrane. The people that are nearly bulletproof, if I can use that as my adjective, the ones that hit somewhere between 8 and 12%, they absolutely have the greatest circulation. They have the healthiest hearts. They've got the lowest risk of diabetes. they keep their body strong. Even at the age of 53, they do better than everybody else. So that may be something to think of, but fish oil is one of those magical things. When I say magical, that's just a figure of speech. I don't mean Pharaoh's magicians throwing down a stick to see if it turns into a snake. That's not what I mean. So if you considered that, that would definitely help you through this right here. And I bet you in a short period of time, you'll be able to tell me that you can squat without getting dizzy or lightheaded.
Okay, so increase my cod liver oil intake.
Yeah, so, I think that's a good thing to think of. Now, you do get fish oil when you eat salmon.
I love salmon.
Oh man, this is getting to be easy. Do you like liver and onions?
I'm working on it.
You know, you're a good man.
Diligently
working. You know what I read the other day? Mm-hmm. I have a book about intelligence, and people that are open-minded, that means they're able to weigh things out and consider them and, you know, try to find out, that's a sign of intelligence. So I can tell right now you're super smart.
I accept that.
Good deal. Any other questions?
Yes, sir, and then I'll hang up. My vision has gotten hazy. I kind of overdid it on some sweets. While I was over in Tyler on vacation, eating donuts, which I wasn't intended to do, but it happened, and the vision has gotten hazy, and I've increased my lemon juice intake, but it seems like a slow process to break down whatever.
Okay.
The internal ducting of whichever organ is not filtering properly, but just get your intake on that. I'll hang up and listen to your
Okay. Thanks for your phone call. I enjoyed it, buddy.
Thank you.
This may not be the right way to start off, but it's a starting point. There is a thing called floaters. I think floaters would be describing something that forms gelatinous stickiness inside the vitreous humor of the eye. But anyway, you see something that would affect the vision. And, you know, the guy's right. If you wanted to find one way to kind of wreck your eyesight or wreck your kidneys or develop neuropathy, lots of refined processed sugar is a pretty good way of doing that if you want to head that way. Anyway, so there's two or three ways I want to answer this right now. Number one, you've got to make sure as a foundational principle that you have enough omega-3 fatty acids. And I guess one of the reasons why I might kind of like hit this topic pretty hard is when I look at the studies on the American population, I'm not necessarily putting my listeners into that category, but I'd be foolish if I didn't kind of consider what the averages are. And so if the average American is right at 4% omega-3 fatty acids as far as the measured percentage of the cell red blood cell membrane, then that's pretty pathetic. And how do you know where you are? You may want to have that tested. That might be interesting to you. Optimal eye health is when you see that omega-3 fatty acid percentage in the red blood cell membrane somewhere between 8 and 12%. And so if your vision is a little bit hazy and you can't get it to clear up, that's one thing that we can think of. Now, the other one, this is really what I want to talk about. There are so many ways that we can look at this, but let me kind of suggest it this way. A long time ago, back in the 80s, when I was in chiropractic college, you know, one of the classes that is very, it's like a whole different language, and I know you respect that, but you know, whatever you do for a living or whatever you're good at, there's a skill set behind all that. So like if you're a plumber or a welder or an electrician, or you work drilling, just or you're a gardener, whatever you do, raise cows. There's an endless amount of opportunity to learn and to grow and to ask questions and to get better and better and better. Well, I'm no different than you are. All this stuff, I'm never going to run out of information to study. That's why I can bring new articles every week, and there a lot of them are just completely new to me because I'm going, man, this is amazing. How exciting we get to learn so much information. The point that I'm getting to is we know what the number one cause of healthcare, you know, problems and disease is in America right now. if you want to just lump it into one category and call it cardiovascular disease, you would be correct. And so one current theory would be, and just take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. And this is usually how it goes. I know, because I see this every single day. Not every day, but, you know, every week I do. Somebody is just going along, minding their own business. They've been going to the same doctor for 7 years. They get yearly physicals. They have all this test done. Then all of a sudden, year number seven, they have very severe chest pain. They can't breathe. It feels like there's an elephant sitting on their chest. And they break out in a sweat, and they feel nauseous, and they go, oh, my goodness, it's my heart. And then all of a sudden, they go to the doctor's office, the emergency room, and they do an EKG to start off with. They might do a chest X-ray, and they start doing labs to measure things like troponin and D-dimer, all these different lab tests, creatine kinase, things to kind of tell us, is this individual having a heart attack? Well, you know what I'm fixing to say, but I'm going to try to make it sound simple and say it anyway. You don't just have a heart attack one day. No, it's probably because that you've got an artery, maybe even a teeny tiny one, that's just totally clogged up. Now, whether that's a blood clot, you know, does somebody have a clot that goes to the coronary artery, or does the artery become clogged off and that's why the heart muscle starts cramping? That's what a heart attack is. It's nothing more than a big honking Charlie horse because you can't get enough oxygen and blood and nutrients to the heart. Does that make sense? Okay. So what do you think about that? If you go to the doctor and they say, we need to do a test called the calcium scoring test. And when you have that calcium scoring test done, the doctor comes back and says, your number is 1,050 exactly on your calcium scoring test, which... this is my opinion, of course, but I don't think anybody's going to argue with me on this one. If you wanted to pick a test that's extremely accurate at determining how healthy your heart is, it's a calcium scoring test, because what it shows very accurately, it shows calcification that builds up in the arteries. And so if you want to sort of loosely interpret that as there's plaque in the arteries, I got clogged arteries, that's arteriosclerosis or atherosclerosis, not good. And so if you had a number of 1,050, that is not a great number. You know what a great number is? Zero. Zero is what you're aiming for. Zero means you do not have any excessive cholesterol and plaque, and most importantly, calcification that builds up in the arteries. Are you with me on that? Okay. Now, as a general rule, your body is going to calcify anything that is chronically inflamed and irritated. Are you with me on that? That's just the way it is. If you shake hands with somebody at church tomorrow and they have an advanced case of arthritis and you notice, boy, I have never seen so many knots and calcium deposits on someone's fingers, and how do they actually grab their keys from their pocket, put it in the ignition and turn their car on? Their fingers are like so distorted. And anyway, you've seen those before. So my point is this, if we're not addressing the reasons why people get sick, then we're not really practicing health care. All we're doing is practicing disease care. Now, I'm not saying that people don't make a ton of money on disease care. You tell me, who makes the most money, taking a bottle of cod liver oil, you know, or consuming cod liver oil daily? That's what I really meant to say. You don't take a bottle every day. Or waiting until somebody has a catastrophic failure and all their arteries are clogged up. And then you got to use heroic measures by doing either open heart surgery, you know, they go straight to Home Depot and they get a skill saw and just cut right down the middle of your breastbone. They don't really do that. But, you know, it's something like that. And then they open up your chest and they start cutting arteries out of your veins, out of your legs to replace them. Well, no, you don't want a coronary bypass. No way. You want to try to get your own arteries back in good repair. So answer a question. Did God design the body to heal itself or did he not? I mean, under the right circumstances. I mean, this ain't rocket science, folks. If you smoke cigarettes, there's no way you're ever going to get your arteries clean. It's impossible. I mean, just look at the studies yourself. Who has the highest rate of vascular failures? Is it people that never smoke cigarettes or people that smoke cigarettes every day? I mean, folks, it's just one of the most damaging things that you can do. I'm not saying that drinking alcohol is not damaging, because it is. It just is. That's just the reality of it. Anyway, what I'm really getting to is this right here. We want to aim towards something that's actually within our control, that we can control, and we can decide we can do a different diet, or we might be able to take supplements. For example, garlic has been shown to be very, very effective when it comes to promoting good circulation. I've already talked about cod liver oil. I think in the past I've kind of beat the topic of magnesium to death. Let's go ahead and take this phone call. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan. Yes, I had a quick question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
After an emergency room visit Saturday, it was suggested that I have my gallbladder removed. So I was just wondering your thoughts on anything, you know, that you could do before removing your gallbladder.
Well, let me ask you this. Did they tell you that the gallbladder is one of the most essential organs in all the body?
No.
Did they tell you that it's critical in order to absorb the nutrients from the food that you eat?
No.
Did they tell you that it's absolutely the most important tissue when it comes to removing toxic waste from the body?
No.
Did they tell you that one of the main roles of the gallbladder is to secrete bile, which helps prevent you from having bacterial infections?
They did not.
Okay. So why did they recommend that you have your gallbladder removed?
Well, that day I had some abdominal and back pain, and it just got kind of so bad that I, anyway, went to a little paramedic, and he suggested we go to the hospital. So they gave me an ultrasound. And they did say my insides looked very clean.
Oh, I think I like the sound of that. That sounds good.
Yeah. And I am a person who tries to eat well and do all the right things. But anyway, and I didn't want to, just run out and get my gallbladder removed.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Yeah. I was just wondering if there's any, if they said I had a stone, if there's any way that that can be dissolved or...
Oh, of course, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's well, relative. I mean, if the stone is the size of a dump truck, probably not.
Uh-huh.
But,
I doubt that it was.
No. No, that's probably just me trying to be funny in my mind. I'm thinking a big honking rock that weighs a ton. Of course, that's not going to be in your body. Okay, so there's so many questions I have, but let's just jump right into it, okay?
Okay.
If a person wanted to have gallbladder problems, these are really common in people that are really overweight and they're very fair-skinned and they eat a lot of sugar and don't exercise and they eat a lot of processed food. Does that mm-hmm. describe you?
No.
Okay. Would you say you spend time out in the sun?
Yes.
Good. Do you like to go for walks?
Yes.
Could you actually put on your walking shoes and walk 2 miles pretty easy right now?
Yes.
Oh, I think I'm liking this. Do you have, and I realize you're a lady, I want to be very respectful, but do you have relatively good quality bowel movements?
Yes.
Do you take any medications whatsoever that might promote gallbladder problems? And I'll just kind of cut to the chase. Hormone replacement therapy is a big one, and antibiotics are another one.
I do not take antibiotics. I do take bioidentical hormone.
Okay, so bingo. You've got a situation. Well, and I get that, mm-hmm. and I appreciate you saying that, but if you look it up, that is a very significant risk factor toward promoting mm-hmm. sludge and stone formation or gravel in the gallbladder. So how long have you taken low-dose bioidentical hormone replacement therapy for?
Quite a while. I would have to look that up.
Well, no, you don't have to be perfect. I mean, are you talking about 1 year or 10 years or what?
More like 10 years, probably.
Okay, so even though no one's ever explained that to you before, I'll be the first one that hormone replacement therapy does place you at risk for the development of gallbladder problems. Now, so let me just put that on hold right there, because I'm not telling you to stop doing that. But what you got to do is you got to do exactly what's in your best interest or in your favor. So I'm just going to throw some things out there, and I don't expect all of them to stick, but maybe some of them will. If I had a gallbladder problem, I would try to fall in love with avocados and sweet potatoes and cherries. Is that easy?
Yes.
Well, you're like a delight. I had a woman yesterday reject all of those things, saying, I don't like that. The texture's not right. That's too cold. That's too orange. I'm going, okay, well, what am I going to tell you? I know how to make it worse. If you want to go to the store and get a Frito chili pie with Velveeta and extra grease and onion rings, I think we could make it worse.
Yes.
So have you ever heard of dandelion root tea?
Yes.
If you start drinking that every day, that will definitely be an aid to your gallbladder. There's an herb called globe artichoke. If you don't write anything else that I'm saying down today, write down the word globe artichoke.
Is that a supplement or is that a food?
Well, I said it's an herb.
Oh, okay.
And so, yes, it's all the above. It's an herb, it's a food, and it's a supplement.
Okay.
So you can get it in liquid form, tablet form, capsule form. So it's easy. And yes, you can eat artichokes. Very good for helping to improve the function of the gallbladder. I think another big one is beets. You're probably going to tell me that you were dreaming last night and seven very skinny, gaunt, drawn beets came up out of the Nile River and they ate seven fat beets. Did that happen?
No.
Oh. Well, I thought maybe that would have happened. Okay, so if
hey,
you start...
I put beet juice in my smoothie. Would that be...
Yeah, now we're talking. That sounds good. And so if you want to throw some frozen cherries in your smoothie, too, and...
I eat cherries today.
Oh, good. Well, and you know what the deal is? Most likely, and this is just speculation on my part. You can't take it like I know what I'm talking about because I haven't examined you, but... If you may have had a gallbladder attack, and that's bad pain. I mean, you could literally be doubled over and just in misery. I think there have been studies on the people that go to the ER thinking they're having a heart attack. Well, it's entirely possible that it could be nothing more than just a gallbladder attack mimicking that. So the pain is that bad. So, yeah, you can incorporate beets in any shape, form, or fashion because beets... Very good, helping to improve bile flow. And that's really what you want. You don't want your bile being thick and sluggish, because when it's thick and sluggish, you start forming gravel and sludge and gunk in there, and gallstones.
Okay. So gallstones, will they pass through as well? Or?
If they're small, yeah. Usually what I tell a person is... Actually, let me start over because I'm giving too much information. What we want is we want the body to do its job. So like if you've been in the garden before and you had a splinter in your toe and the splinter was so deep you couldn't really get it out with a pair of tweezers and you said, oh, great. But eventually your immune system or your body just pushes the splinter out. Have you ever had that happen to you?
Yes.
Yeah, so if you give it like a couple weeks, you might go, oh, my goodness, the splinter came up to the surface and the body's pushing it out. That's really what you want with your gallbladder also. You want your gallbladder being strong and healthy enough. That's where globe artichoke and the beet powder or the beet juice can actually help improve how your gallbladder is able to contract and to push stuff out. They usually do a test called a HIDA scan. They probably set you up with a consultation with multiple surgeons, didn't they?
They did.
Well, they probably did labs on you, and it is entirely possible there could have been some type of a low-grade infection that could have triggered this. Now, if this was the year 1920, I realize that was when I was very, very young, but just play along with me, okay? If you were an osteopath and they found gallstones in a body, they would take the gallstone and cut that sucker in half with a bandsaw blade, because they wanted to find out what the stones are made of. But when they put those stones in a petri dish, they almost always are spewing forth with horrible infections. So I always think that sometimes gallstones form because it's an attempt by the body to capture toxic waste that your body can't eliminate or get rid of. So there's like a ton of things that you can do, but I would say meat is usually very, very safe. Usually the higher the fat, the more risky it is. So do you do well with chicken and fish?
Well, no, I mostly eat nutritarian.
What is that?
Eat to Live, Dr. Joel Fuhrman's. And I get a lot of protein from, nuts, seeds, and beans.
I don't agree.
Okay.
And that's just my opinion, but I just don't agree with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the only way to get complete protein is by eating animal flesh, and that could be as simple as eating fish. Do you like to eat fish?
I do.
Okay, well, that's going to be your source of protein. And I'm not trying to be difficult. I just have never read that the complete proteins come from nuts or beans. But I think that they're good for you. Protein is really a big deal. Now, I don't have the advantage of looking at your labs right now, but if I looked at them, I would look for anything that might be out of balance, that might be giving me a clue. Sometimes what they do is they'll measure a protein called bilirubin. And so if your bilirubin is 0.3, well, that's great. But what if your bilirubin is 1.1, 1.2, 1.3? Mm-hmm. That might point toward congestion of the gallbladder. So this is just my analogy, but if a woman was, if a man is horribly constipated, there's no way that his body is going to be in good working order. He's going to say, if I could just go to the bathroom, I could feel amazing. And, you know, people tell me that all the time. They'll say stuff like, Dr. Morgan, when I have a good bowel movement, I feel great. But when I go only one time per week, I feel miserable all week long. Well, that's because you're soaking up all that toxic waste. And all the old-time doctors back in the 1920s, they would call the gallbladder the trash can of the body, meaning it deals with the worst toxins. And the only reason I kind of jumped on the protein issue is protein is so critical to be able to detoxify hormones. And if the source of your protein is going to be nuts or beans or tofu, stuff like that, it may be that you're lacking one unique protein. For example, have you ever heard of an amino acid or a protein called taurine?
Yes.
A lot of times taurine is really, really deficient in somebody that has gallbladder problems. Because without taurine, you can't make high-quality bile that has a good flow. It tends to become more constipated or sluggish or congested. That's kind of a weird way of saying I know, but that's kind of what I think of. So do you take any medications besides low-dose hormone replacement therapy?
No.
Okay. Did you look at your labs when you went to the ER to see what they actually said?
Yes, I did.
Did you see anything that was out of range, like it was too low or too high?
I did. There was three things that were marked.
Well, what were they?
My pulse. Lymphocyte.
Okay. That's a very important cell of your immune system. Was it high?
It was 0.69. It said it was a little low.
Okay. So this tells me this is a chronic issue. When your lymphocytes are low, your immune system's been working too hard for too long. It's getting exhausted. What was another one?
It said the glucose was 137 high.
Well, if I had tummy pain doubled over, probably have high sugar too.
I've never had high sugar before, so that was kind of a surprise.
Well, but that can be totally just from the stress of going, so I'll cut you some slack on that one.
Okay. And then the other one was globulins. It says low, but it was 2.4, and the range is 2.5 to something.
What was your albumin number? Do you know?
Oh, let's see. Let me run over here and look.
I know. I'm kind of throwing stuff at you. Albumin. Albumin is the main transportation protein of the body. You really want that at least 4.5 and above.
Albumin.
Sorry,
Morgan, I just wrote down the thing.
Oh, no. I'm kind of hitting you out of left field on that deal.
Let's see. Okay, let's see.
Have you seen alkaline phosphatase, or ALK-PHOS for short?
Let's see. clicking on my test results here, and nothing's happening. One moment. Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Well, I'm probably asking too much. This is so.
Oh, no.
No, but anyway, okay. There's a reason why your gallbladder's having problems, if indeed that's the case. But so I would focus on what can we do to help your body to heal and get back in good working order. Eat apples, mm-hmm. eat sweet potatoes, eat avocados. I'm always curious about the protein issue, because if there's not a protein, then you can't detoxify hormones. And that's the task that your liver has right now. When you take bioidentical hormones, you're not talking about something you take once a year. You're talking about daily. So once they've done their job, your body has got to get rid of them or they become toxic. And when you have a toxic buildup of hormones, I mean, I'm sure your doctor measures you all the time to find out if your progesterone levels are just right and your estradiol is just right. Is that true?
Yes.
Do they come back perfect all the time?
Yes, it comes down great. Albumin is, let's see, it's right in the middle of the normal. But
well, what's the number say?
Let's see, let me click on it.
Well, I don't know that I have time for going through all of them.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway, okay. I'll let somebody else call. Sorry, I shouldn't have gone down that line. But anyway,
well, thank you.
Go to your doctor and ask lots of questions, but I've given you a couple ideas that could be in your best interest.
Okay, Dr. Morgan, thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay. There's a phone line officially open. If you've been waiting to call, I'll get you right in. Here we go. Good morning. Welcome to the program. You've got to turn the radio completely off. Getting away from it doesn't do anything. Just turn the radio off totally.
Last week you mentioned something about Roundup with Cheerios.
Yeah.
Not to eat them. Is Roundup affected on any of the other cereals?
Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
All cereals are affected by Roundup?
I'm so sorry. I have not read studies on every single bowl of cereal, but you have to understand cereal is just processed food.
Yeah.
So it's gonna have chemicals in it. Roundup, a lot of times they just call it glyphosate. But in Vietnam, they used to spray it on all the green stuff growing so they could kill it. It's called Agent Orange.
Huh.
And so I would suggest that if a person eats processed cereals every single day, they're asking to get a toxic exposure to a chemical. If you want to call it an herbicide, I think that's probably pretty close. Something that kills a living plant. I just don't think that's in a human being's best interest.
Okay.
And I think it's a known causer of cancer. I mean, the human body can only handle so much toxic carcinogenic waste before things start to break down. And I want you to be radiant and healthy and feel amazing.
Okay. I just wanted to know about that, and I thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, I have an idea for you. What if you had your heart set on Honey Nut Cheerios that are made of oats? Okay. Well, what if you went to the store and you purchased a bag of what's called organic rolled oats? And yeah, this is old-fashioned because it takes energy and effort to soak them and cook them, but what if you soaked them overnight? If you don't know what that is, just go to YouTube and look it up. I'm sure there's something we can all learn about that, including me. And then you cooked old-fashioned oats, and you added to it blueberries, or you put some cinnamon on top, or you had some good clean butter. And maybe you like your nuts, because you're a nut. Anyway, but you would actually be able to put whole, real foods. So what is the ingredient in oatmeal? It's called oats. It's got a single ingredient. But if that has been processed in a box of Cheerios, then we might find it's loaded with a bunch of Roundup, which is a toxic chemical. I want you to be healthy. I want you to be very happy. I want you to have good emotions. I want you to be able to be very productive. But I don't want your body breaking down with one disease after the other. And I'm sure every medical professional that's listening to the program right now would agree with me. They don't want to see sick people all day long. They'd rather encourage people to be healthy and strong. I mean, you got to understand, folks, when people are very, very sick, this is not what's in the best interest of our country. It is such a huge burden. I mean, you don't even know what's going to happen. Well, neither do I. But if I look at the healthcare dollars, we're going to be burning through so much money just taking care of disease. And, of course, it affects those of us who aren't sick. Do you know that? What do you think health insurance costs? It is astronomical, even if you're extremely healthy. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I am suffering from sciatica, and I was wondering if you can comment on that. The doctor said I have an inflamed disc that's cutting off the sciatic nerve, and it doesn't happen all the time, but after I walk for a few minutes, like 20 minutes, my leg gets stiff.
I hate that for you. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Did you say you're a pirate with a peg leg?
Well, after 20 minutes of walking around, it gets stiff like that.
No, I think I saw you walk out of Walmart the other day. You had this dark black hat on with big heavy boots and buckles everywhere.
Anyway, oh, yeah, with a patch.
Which eye? Okay, yeah, I had a deep conversation with the parrot on your shoulder. Anyway, all right, so if you have sciatica, what you want to do is you want to start, and you're going to have to kind of accept what I'm saying through faith, but you know, how do we get faith? You gotta hear some information and decide, is that something you want to do or not? So there was a book called Core Performance by Mark Verstegen. When I had severe back pain, that's the protocol that I used. And I'm telling you, it worked like a champ. I hadn't had a problem since, and that was like 30 years ago. So you could go to YouTube if you had a computer or a laptop, and you could type in low back mobility exercises or stretches for men with sciatica. I'm sorry, low back mobility stretches for men and pirates with sciatica. So if you would start doing that, that would go a long way to helping to unpinch that nerve and getting rid of the inflammation.
Okay.
Just as simple as that. If you would do that several times a day, let's see if we can't. There's a stretch called the world's greatest stretch. I want you to look at that on YouTube after you get off the phone with me.
Sure.
Now, I know that the pirate websites have their own protocol, but I'm giving you my protocol.
Okay. Okay.
What's your parrot's name, by the way?
I don't know.
Is it Crackers? Hey, thank you very much. I'm really rooting for you, and I hate that, but take good care of yourself and do these mobility sciatica stretches and see if they don't help a whole bunch.
Okay, I really appreciate it.
You betcha, man. God bless you, and thank you for your phone call again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Lord willing, I will be back this time next Saturday at 7 o'clock.